You are listening to Post Rock Paper Scissors. I'm Morgan Freeman. Did you know that? Welcome to Post Rock Paper Scissors. This is Armand here. This is episode 57. It's our second episode of the midweek curated podcast. Today we have Tom Butcher of the Silent Ballet. How's it going, Tom?
Hi, I'm just fine. How are you?
Like I mentioned, Tom is a writer of the Silent Ballet. I met Tom, well, not personally, but a couple of years back.
Right. Digitally met
through the interwebs. Mm-hmm. I think originally from Decoy Music, right?
Yeah. I
posted on the forums there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the silent ballet sprouted from Decoy, and we both independently moved on to the silent ballet's forums. And now Tom writes for the silent ballet. How long have you been writing there, Tom?
Oh, God. I think I've been... See, I was hired summer of 2007, I think. And I've been an editor for, like, 3 years now, since 2008. Since early 2008, man.
All right.
Time flies when you're listening to very, very long instrumental music.
I know what you mean. It makes my commute so much shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, do you have any recollection or do you remember what the first thing you ever reviewed was?
The first thing? Jordan, who's the editor-in-chief of TSB, sent me a couple albums for test reviews. They weren't especially good. Oh, one was... it's a post-metal band that has a little bit of people who are familiar with them. Let me see if I can remember what it was. Omega Massive. I don't know if you've heard of them. Some people like them.
Yeah, they had that album, what was it, Geisterstadt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one. Really...
I think Omega Massive might actually come up in a couple episodes from now, because we have one of the untranslatable words is Schadenfreude.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering what the German word would be.
So, yeah. I think there's two German words. I think the week before that is actually, I think it's a German word. It's Torschlusspanik, I think. Something like that. It means, like, the fear of getting old or something like that. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Oh, okay. Huh, that's interesting, because it would literally mean, like, fear of a door closing.
That's exactly what it says, yeah. It's like a... The description was like, it literally translates into gate closing panic,
mm-hmm.
But it's like the fear of getting old and losing time or whatever.
Oh, that's cool. I haven't heard that word, but I'll enter it to my, mental dictionary now.
All right, that's cool. So let's go over what we just played in the first track in today's show. If you want to mention what it is, Tom.
Sure. The song was called Short Ride in a Fast Machine, which is a piece that was composed by John Adams, the recent John Adams, not the president, in 1986, I think. Anyway, so I guess I should say all the songs that I picked for today are sort of contemporary classical music, which, I mean, I know lots of people who listen to post-rock listen to stuff that's kind of classical-ish, like Max Richter, but I was trying to highlight stuff that might actually be played in a concert hall, that sort of thing.
I really enjoyed the playlist you came up with, because this is a type of music or genre that I've been meaning to get into more. There's a handful of stuff that I listen to, but it's obviously not as much as I would like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I even bought the book The Rest Is Noise just to...
Oh, I love that book.
Just to, yeah. So I've gotten, like, a fifth of the way through, so I'm still in the olden times. But I'm glad we're playing the show. Hopefully the listeners enjoy it as well. I know it's a little off from what we normally play, but I think that's good. Hopefully there's mutual growth among all us music fans.
Yeah, and it's not something I know a whole lot about, but it's, enough that I could concoct a short playlist of stuff that I
And a lot of the stuff is unfamiliar to me, so I always enjoy that. Anyway, so that first track that we played was by John Adams, like Tom mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time I've ever heard that song. And it was a badass song. All the songs today are pretty badass for, like, it's not, whenever people say, oh, classical music, it's gotten such a negative stereotype of dorky, nerdy, not cool music, but all the songs in today's show are pretty badass.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I guess, one of the things about contemporary classical is it tends to be of the sort that, you know, is kind of self-consciously designed to freak you out, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, and some of it does.
Mm-hmm.
When we get into the track, the next track.
Yeah. Please don't anyone, you know, shut off your computers when you hear it.
Yeah. So... I guess we can jump into that next track now.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to say? Well, you should mention probably what it is.
It's by the composer is Krzysztof Penderecki, who's a Polish composer, although he lives here now, or He might be dead now, but
well, no.
But he lived here. He lived here recently. Possibly is still living here.
Okay. Well, I wikied some of this stuff before the show, and there was a date of birth, but not a date of death. So I'm gonna assume he's still alive.
It's probably a good indication. Yeah. Anyway, it's called "Threnody to the Victims of Hiroshima," I sort of broke my rules in wanting to do more contemporary stuff a little bit because this is actually composed in 1960. So it's a lot older than most of the other stuff that I have here, but it's absolutely one of my favorite pieces of music of all time. And I think you can sort of hear echoes of it in sort of more modern, contemporary, but, you know, super indie stuff that we listen to now. Maybe.
Yeah, if you've ever watched a horror movie,
you
can definitely say whoever wrote the score to that is a Penderecki fan, or to some degree, because this song is really haunting, and like I said, I wikied it, and it turns out it's written for 52 strings.
Yeah.
So, all those layers of string just kind of...
Yeah, and I'll wait till after the song's done to...
Sure. So,
see what I was going to say next.
All right, so we'll get into that next song. It's by Christoph Penderecki, and it's called "Threnody for the Victims of Hiroshima."
Thank you. were two sisters walking down by a stream. Oh, the wind and the rain. The older one pushed the younger one in. Oh, the dreadful wind and rain pushed her in the river to drown. Oh, the wind and the rain watched her as she floated on down. Oh, the dreadful wind and rain floated on down to the old mill pond. Oh, the wind and the rain, she floated on down to the old mill pond. Fished her out with his long, long hook. Oh, wind and the rain. And he brought this maiden from the brook. Oh, the dreadful wind and the rain made a fiddle bow from her long yellow. Fiddle pegs from her long finger bones. Oh, the wind and rain. He made fiddle pegs from her long finger bones. Oh, a dreadful wind and rain. Made a fiddle bridge from her own nose bridge. Oh, the wind and rain. He made a fiddle bridge from her own nose bridge. Cried, oh, the dreadful wind and rain. And he made a fiddle from her own dress bone. Oh, the sound could melt a heart of stone. Oh, the dreadful wind and rain. The only tune that fiddle would play. Oh, the wind and the rain. The only tune that fiddle would.
Bye.
All right, welcome back. Like I mentioned earlier, we got Tom Butcher, one of the writers of the Silent Ballet, our new home, on the show today, guest curating the podcast. So what did we play in that block, Tom?
So the first one was Penderecki's Threnody to the Victims of Hiroshima. The second one was Nico Muhly's The Only Tune, and that was the third movement of that piece, which is called The Only Tune also. The third movement of the piece, The Only Tune, which is called The Only Tune. And the last one was by Steve Reich, and it's Tehillim, or Tehillim, it's a Hebrew word, I don't speak Hebrew, but that was the fourth movement from that piece.
All right, so you wanted to mention something about Penderecki?
Yeah, so if you ever get a chance to look at the score for the Penderecki piece, which you can do with, you know, a quick Google search, it's fascinating because most of it isn't written in standard musical notation. I mean, you know, you think of like quarter notes and things written on a staff. And it does still have a staff, but what it does is it divides the violins into lots of different groups and then draws a line along where they should be playing and expands it as this line to get, like, so it gets bolder and bolder and thicker as they need to be getting louder and encompassing more of a spectrum. So it's just this, like, really, he's focusing so much on the texture rather than, you know, the specific notes. And yeah, it just looks, like, really cool if you look at it, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because you mentioned that he's focusing a lot on texture.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, you know, I have this podcast and sometimes people, if this comes up in a conversation, people ask me, what do you play? Mm-hmm. And I sometimes tell them that, oh, the music deals a lot more with texture mm-hmm. than like song structure and stuff like that. And I always get a blank stare because, <it's, laughs> yeah, not a lot of people, I guess, talk in terms of texture. I guess when it comes to regular music that played on the radio and all that stuff, but mm-hmm. it's good to hear it here.
Yeah.
And
well, it's sort of interesting because I've sort of realized over the last couple of years that I just really enjoy things that are thick composed. And the opening to that piece is certainly very thick composed.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I even mentioned it in the show last week with Steve that it's always more enjoyable when you peel something like an onion, kind of like mm-hmm. there's layers and layers to it, and you find that more with each listen. And anyway, so yeah, the Penderecki track is just like I mentioned about the John Adams one, it's a badass track.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a constant onslaught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the strings are just kind of screeching and pummeling the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty amazing track. I'm glad this is the first time I've ever heard of it.
It's, it's incredible. It's, you know, so harsh, but, I mean, in a certain way, I think it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard, you know, in sort of a very backward,
you know, it's like
modern beautiful or what have
you. Yeah, it's like finding beauty in a car crash.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's mention the second track we played.
Right, so, yeah, that was Nico Muhly, who sort of he's about as famous as young classical composers can get these days. And that's his piece, The Only Tune, which is from his 2008 album, Mother Tongue.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that track.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't heard Mother Tongue. I had heard Speaks Volumes by Nico Muhly.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't heard his one that he released last year.
It's really good.
Yeah, I wikied his bio, and there was just hundreds of things he's worked on.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard, you know, a tenth of what he's composed.
Yeah.
So
he's pretty impressive. And he's fairly young, right?
Yeah, I think he's like 28 or 29, maybe 30. Yeah, but
he's just one of those people that make you feel like shit for being so, like, unsuccessful or whatever you want to call it.
He's very annoyingly prolific.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I really enjoyed about that track was that it featured Sam Amidon on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew he was actually on any of Nico Muhly's stuff until I actually heard that song and I can recognize his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of had a total hard-on for Celine Dion lately. You know, because I really like that old-timey, turn-of-the-century, like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou type music.
Mm-hmm.
And his music has a lot of that feel to it.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
When he brings it and gives it, like, a modern twist to it,
mm-hmm.
like in this track, and even in the track with the Valgeir Sigurdsson track
mm-hmm.
from Dreamland. So I really love when they kind of get the old-timiness and bring it mm-hmm. to a modern interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I suppose I probably cheated a little bit with including this song with when I was doing the contemporary classical stuff, because I sincerely doubt this has ever been played in a chamber or that it ever would be. But Niko Mieli writes classical music, so I figured it was...
Close enough.
Yeah. Another interesting thing is that Ben Frost is on that track.
Mm, yeah. Ben Frost is like the second person I've had a total hard on. So whenever they combine forces,
mm-hmm.
it's really awesome.
Yeah, the disc... information lists him as playing bass programming and hair.
Hair?
Okay. Hair, yes.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to... I think Ben Frost has a... He's, I think, scoring a video game.
Oh, really?
And yeah, something like that. And he's redoing the score to a famous Russian movie called Solaris. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
I think I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, it's this sci-fi movie from the 70s by, I can't believe I forgot his name. The same director who did Stalker and a couple other great sci-fi movies from the 70s. Yeah, so another thing about that Niko Mieli track, which I'm glad you played it on the show today, because it was a nice balance compared to the Penderecki track.
Yeah, I thought it was very good to have that one after. Although it's still very morbid, if you like the lyrics, but...
It's all right. The music is a little bit more cheery,
mm-hmm.
And it kind of balances off that totally haunting Penderecki track.
Mm-hmm.
So after the Mieli track, we played a track by Steve Reich called, Tehillim?
Yeah, it's the Hebrew word for Psalms.
Anything you want to mention about that track, Tom?
Well, let's see. It was composed in 1981, and I assume most listeners are probably at least somewhat familiar with Steve Reich. He's done a lot of really great work, especially Music for 18 Musicians is probably his most famous piece, which is just wonderful. This is a piece that I don't actually know a whole lot about. To be honest, I haven't actually heard the whole thing. This is we played the fourth movement from it, and I have this because it was included on a CD that was like a history of Western music. So this is obviously towards the end of that CD.
Anyway, one thing I did notice in that track is there was this constant just use of vocals layered,
mm-hmm.
and you know, in the typical repetitive Reich way, you know,
mm-hmm.
and what it made me think of is Juliana Barwick, and I'm like, if you just watch this in reverb, it's basically what like Juliana Barwick is now. It's like you can see where I'm sure I'm gonna go off on a limb and say that she's influenced by Steve Reich to some degree, because you can hear the influences in the music.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe this is just me making stuff up in my head. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not very familiar with her, so I can't say. But
basically, if you're not familiar, her music is like all a cappella. It's just layers of vocals. There's a lot of reverb in there, and it's very. I think I read somewhere where some guy described it to Care Bears having sex on acid. That's what it sounds like, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of what it sounds like, yeah.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. Yeah, I had a professor in college who sort of described Reich's music, and this piece in particular, the CD that I have this on was for the, accompanied the textbook to that class. But he described it as being, like, phase music, and he showed us a painting where there are, like, stripes moving in and out of phase, and so sometimes they link up and other times they're just like completely out of phase, or I guess like a sine wave shifting around be another good example. So I think that's sort of an interesting way of visualizing it, or thinking of it. I don't know. I just like it. It's interesting.
Anyway, that was a 20-minute block right there.
Mm-hmm.
The next block that we're going to go into is a bit more modern. Well, the Muley track was relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
But the block coming up, two tracks. They're both from 2010.
Yep.
This next track that's coming up, you want to mention what it is, Tom?
Sure. It's a collaboration between So Percussion and Matt Mose. So Percussion being a sort of avant-garde percussion quartet. And Matt Mose is an electronica duo, and it's called Cross.
We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back. Let's go over what we played in that block. Like we mentioned, the first track was by So Percussion and Matmos, and it was called Cross. Anything you want to mention about that track, Tom?
Well, it's from a 2010 album, Treasure State, which is the whole thing's a collaboration between the two artists. I thought the album was absolutely great. I reviewed it last year, which is how I'm familiar with it, and I ended up giving it an 8.5. Which is it's really high score for TSB. Maybe not for most publications, but never given anything higher than a 9, it's essentially the second highest score you can get.
You know, I haven't heard this record. I'm glad that you played this track in your playlist, because I really enjoyed this track. Whenever I, the end of the year last year, I was going through TSB's top 100 list or whatever, and I would look at an album cover and see who it's by and read a little bit about it, and then I'd say, eh, because it's a hundred albums, you can't go through all of them. So I would pick and choose, and I skipped over So Percussion at Matmos, and that was a bad decision.
Were they even on the list? I thought they didn't make it. Maybe I didn't, because, you know, we don't know the list until it's published, and so I'm reading it just like anybody else, even though I helped contribute to it, and so I might have skipped over it, but I thought they didn't make the list.
Well, maybe they might not have. I also remember, like, going to, you can, like, filter the reviews by what got, like, the highest rating, and I glanced through that, too, I think, and because last year I was really lazy, and I didn't really check out much new stuff until the end of the year.
I get really lazy about music too.
Yeah, so I'm glad you played this track because it was a really awesome track. It just felt like a really confident, funky track. It had this nice jazzy vibe to it, and it was really raw. I really enjoyed this track. It was great, and I'm definitely gonna go check out the rest of the album.
Yeah, the album is, I like it a lot. I think I might have been possibly the only person on staff who really liked it a lot, but it's sort of very out there and changes a whole lot. There's each song is, it sort of has like a different object that's used as the primary percussion bass, I think. So like they have a track called Needles, which is composed entirely using an amplified cactus.
Oh,
yeah.
Amplified cactus.
You like stick a microphone, a contact microphone, onto a cactus and then grab a pair of gloves and just like fondle the needles.
Oh, that sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the song, I think maybe it doesn't work especially well. I don't like this much as some of the other stuff, but it's just, you know, really cool if you think they're playing a cactus.
That's pretty funny. Imagine, I'm sure a lot of people who are in a band, if they tell people, oh, I'm in a band, they'll always ask, oh, what do you play? Or, and if you say guitar, they'll ask you, like, oh, do you play lead guitar or whatever? I would love to see the reaction of someone's face when you say, oh, I play the cactus.
Yeah, I know.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So that song is called Cross, and the liner notes don't actually say what the cross refers to, so I don't know if it's like, you know, like a crucifix, or maybe it's more allegorical or what, but
it's hard sometimes when there's no words. Anyway, after that track, what do we play after that, Tom?
After that was a track called Sorrow Conquers Happiness. It's the first movement of a three-part piece called Bow to String, and it was composed by Daniel, I'm probably going to butcher this name, Bjarnason, I believe, maybe. So if he's Icelandic, you know that he's going to be writing incredible music and have a name impossible to pronounce.
Yeah, I'm glad you played this song, but you kind of spoiled it a little for me. There was a very good chance I was going to play a Bjarnason track in a few episodes from now. I'll still probably
go for it, yeah. I mean, the album's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really great album. You can tell the Bjarnason track was more in line with, I guess, the avant-garde or minimalist stuff from, like, the 80s, like Penderecki, and it was a great track. Just, again, another really badass track that's an unrelenting onslaught of just pummeling strings, and it's great.
Mm-hmm. The whole album's fantastic, and there's a lot that's, you know, much more contemplative than this piece, but I thought it was probably the one that worked best individually, and all of the you know, complete compositions were too long to really use. So
yeah, so hopefully everyone enjoyed that track, and hopefully everyone enjoyed the show so far today. I know it's a little bit of a deviation from the norm, but that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
We got one track left in the show, and it's an epic one. So before we get into that, Tom, do you have anything to mention about anything you're anticipating in 2011 in terms of records or what TSB is going to do or something you want to mention?
Records. Well, that stuff that you mentioned by Ben Frost is... I'm really looking forward to that. And Tim Hecker's got a new record. Actually, I think it came out about a week ago. I've listened to it once, but I wasn't really paying a whole lot of attention while I was doing it. So I guess you could say I'm still very much anticipating that, even though I have it on my hard drive now. What else? You know, Yindi Halda might finally come out with their album. You never know.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Every year, it's Yindi Halda is coming out with a new album, and every year it doesn't come out.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping at this point they've amassed like a six disc opus or something. But
yeah, I mean, I saw them in concert, well, in bar, about 2 years ago, I think, and they played one of their new songs, and I thought it was really good. And then they ended up spending the night at my house, actually. So that's
anything you want to say about that? I'm sure there's a lot of people who listen to the show like Yindi Halda. They're a very popular band. Anything interesting about that occasion?
I mean, they're all really nice. It was, I was doing an interview with Yindi Halda, which is on TSB now, and it was sort of funny. Like, after I completed the interview, they asked me if they could stay at my place, because, you know, there's, like, six of them in the band, and they also had their manager and a guitar tech or something like that. So it was like, you know, a good number of people, and hotels are expensive.
So this was unannounced to you? You didn't know about it?
I mean, I was home for the summer, and
that's pretty cool.
And so I just sort of called my parents up, and I was like, so how would you feel if an English post-rock band spends the night...
That's pretty funny. So you guys had a big slumber party, huh?
Yeah, they, you know, they, we've got a decent-sized basement, so I think most of them slept down there, you know, in, like, sleeping bags or on couches and things like that. Obviously, we don't have 8 guest beds, but, yeah, and the next morning, my mom made them waffles.
That sounds pretty awesome. All right, so we've got one track left, and like I mentioned, it's an epic one. And so, you want to mention what it is, Tom?
Yeah, it's a piece called Hold Me Neighbor in This Storm, which was composed by, I'll probably pronounce this incorrectly, but Aleksandra Vrebilov. She's a Serbian composer. She's based here now, though. And that piece was on Floodplain, which is a 2009 album by the Kronos Quartet, who is a fantastic string quartet group that's been around for like 25 or more years now. Some of the people who are more familiar with post-rock might know them because of they're on the Fountain soundtrack with Mogwai that Clint Mansell did.
Yeah. Also on like Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, yeah.
And that track was, I believe it was a 22-minute piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nearly.
So it keeps in line with all the big epic tracks that we're playing at the end of shows later.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to break the new tradition.
I guess I need to keep this this tradition going.
Uh-huh.
I'll probably play like a Basinski Disintegration Loop song to end the show one day. Anyway, so the track's a 20-minute long track. Anything you want to mention about the track, Tom?
Not a whole lot. I don't know a whole lot about Vrebilov. Besides, this is the only piece I've heard by her. But I think it's fantastic. Apparently she composed it trying to sort of show the underlying unity to, Serbian and Albanian and Bosnian people who are conflicted over ethnicity and religion, stuff like that. So it has, you know, a very positive message. I think it's just really fantastic. I'm a sucker for long form work, which is probably one of the reasons why I started listening to stuff like Godspeed You Black Emperor and things like that, or Gibba, as I tend to think of them in my mind.
So if Lady Gaga came up with a 20-minute track, any chance you'd take a listen?
I'd definitely listen. Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, let's wrap up the show. Thank you, Tom, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on. This is a lot of fun.
Hopefully everyone enjoyed it. We'll wrap up the show. We'll be back next week with another guest who will be unnamed at this moment because I don't know who it is. And one of the untranslatable shows coming up. But anyway, here's Kronos Quartet. Or actually, who was the actual composer of that?
Alexandra Vrbolov.
All right. With their song, or her song, Hold Me, Neighbor, in This Storm.
Thank you. Thank you.